This is a CBC podcast. The new CBC Radio Android app is here. With the click of a button, you can listen to your favorite CBC radio programs, enjoy live streams, and access more than 60 of CBC's most popular programs on demand. Choose your region, set favorites, and share what you're listening to via Facebook or Twitter. The CBC Radio app, now everywhere. Go to Google Play and install today.
Never date a waitress at your favorite restaurant.
Always say hello to strangers in the elevator.
Never go to bed with dirty dishes in the sink.
Always keep a corkscrew in your glove box.
Never cook bacon with your shirt off.
Always choose rock over paper or scissors.
Never take your eyes off the spider.
Always buy more toilet paper before finishing the last roll.
Never ask questions you don't want the answer to.
Always be careful with someone's heart.
Never wear clothes that are more interesting than you are.
Always question the rules.
I'm Jonathan Goldstein, and you're listening to Wiretap on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius XM. Today's episode, Breaking the Rules.
Danny says there are rules. He learned them from his older brother, Max. But they'd been around before Max. They'd been around forever. And no matter what, you never broke them. I don't have an older brother, or any brothers, or even a sister. So Danny said he'd let me in on how things work. You have to establish ground rules, he says. Like, if you pick her up after choir, give it a month and she'll be asking, why don't you pick me up from choir anymore? So just never start in the first place. But what if I like picking her up after choir, I ask. That's present you talking, he says. And you have to always be thinking about future you. So if present you picks her up at choir, present you is screwing future you. Who's future me, I ask. The guy who doesn't want to ditch his friends on a cold Wednesday night to meet his yodeling girlfriend. Always make time for your bros, he says. That's another basic ground rule. Always be the one to get off the phone first. Always make sure your texts are no longer than 50 characters. No exclamation points, no emoticons. And for God's sake, don't ever tell her you love her. What if I do, I say. Oh God, Danny says. Do you? No, I say. I was just wondering. The truth is, though, I think I might. Sometimes, when Teresa and I are in class together, and I'm looking at her from across the room, I can feel the words pulsing in my throat, banging in my ears like a bass drum. I love you. I love you. It's so loud in the quiet that it feels like probably everyone can hear it. Don't hang out with her friends. Don't meet her parents. Don't let her meet your parents. Not for at least a year. Danny's been dating his girlfriend, Carly, for a year and a half. She lives in Shadowgate, and he only sees her on the weekends. And that, he says, is how he likes it. Sometimes, he says, he even skips a weekend so she doesn't start getting too used to things. I've never met Carly, but Danny says she has blonde hair and blue eyes, that she loves all the same music he does, that she makes an excellent smoked meat omelet, and that she loves to drink beer in the bathtub with him. We should double sometime, he says. What the hell? Danny says. Are you her slave now? Earlier, Danny happened to be walking by when I was tying Teresa's shoelace outside the lockers. That breaks at least a half a dozen rules, he says. Her hands were full. I didn't want her to fall, I say. I would have done that for anyone. You looked like you were proposing to her, down on your f***ing knees, he says. I so would have laughed if while you were down there, she suddenly kicked you in the chin. Dude, you so would have been asking for it. Teresa gave me this picture for my wallet. In it, she's no more than 5. Her hair curly back then, her eyelashes already long like they are now. Now she wants a picture of me for her wallet. She says so in front of Danny. Can you imagine how cute he was as a baby? She asks. Whatever, says Danny. Later, he tells me to never do it. That should be rule numero uno, he says. She'll start thinking she's your aunt. Or worse, she could pull witchcraft on it. You're sick, I say. Carly asked me for a baby picture once, he says, but I told her they all burned in a house fire. We both laugh. What's her body like? He asks. It's nice, I say. What's nice? He asks. She's nice, I say. Stop talking baby talk, he says, and shakes his head like he's deeply disappointed in me. Danny takes me aside in the cafeteria. He tells me he saw Teresa sitting on my lap on the bleachers. She's too big for you, he says. She looks like she might tip over and fall off. She makes you look small. What if I don't care? I ask. Then don't ask for my advice, he says. I didn't ask for your advice. I'm trying to be a friend here, he says. Would you rather I just thought these things behind your back like everyone else? Okay, I say. Thanks for the tip. I'm tempted to tell him about what everyone says about him and Carly. How there probably is no Carly, for one thing. But instead, I turn around and head to class. At night, when I listen to music in bed, in my head, it's her and me slow dancing. In the morning, in the shower with my eyes closed, it's us walking lost in the rain. When I text her during classes and tell her I miss her, tell her using hundreds of letters, way more than 50, it feels like letting go, like I'm falling backwards into a bed piled with fur coats. I wish we could throw away all the phones and all of everything, she texts. Have nothing but me and you under the blankets. I answer her back with stupid, excited things. If you had a dog, I'd only feed it flowers, I write. If you were a horse, I'd let you ride me. If you were a boy, I'd go gay. What's it like to be so pretty? Teresa, I would do anything for you. On the school bus, under the dinner table, standing by the urinal, every time I hit send, I get this rush. Letting myself love her is my favorite rule to break.
My name is Scott Lederer, and when I was a kid, I really didn't like rules.
I know what you're thinking. What kid likes rules? But Scott was the kind of kid who hated rules so much. Hated being told what to do, hated being forced to sit still in class all day, that once, in grade 8, he walked out of his Long Island school in the middle of recess, hopped on his bicycle, and started pedaling to Washington, D.C. Why? So he could personally ask President Reagan to change the rules. Make it so kids didn't have to go to school. He made it as far as Queens before giving up. But Scott's contrariness didn't stop there. In fact, his next rebellion was against a force much bigger than the education system. It was against gravity.
So we were there in class, and the teacher was explaining gravity. And he explained that if you drop a ball, and of course the key thing here is to drop it, not throw it, but if you just drop a ball, let's just say a rubber ball, onto the flat surface of the earth, it'll bounce, but the laws of physics dictate that it cannot bounce as high as the point you dropped it from. And this is sort of obvious when you think about it. You know, if you've ever dropped a ball, you see that it does that, and each bounce is lower and lower, and eventually it just sort of stops bouncing. But for some reason, I just couldn't buy it.
Wait, you couldn't buy what?
I couldn't buy this fact that a ball can't bounce higher than the point where it falls from. I just somehow thought this can't be. There must be a way. There must be a way. And I just raised my hand and I said, I disagree. I think that the ball can bounce higher. And, you know, the class sort of laughed, and the teacher, you know, he said, no, it's really the case. You know, don't worry about it. And I said, no, I can do this. I can make a ball bounce higher, and I'll bring a ball in tomorrow and I'll show you. And I think he just sort of dismissed me and said, sure, whatever. You know, he probably didn't expect that I would actually bring a ball in the next day. But in fact, I went home that night. I picked up some supplies on the way home, and I built a ball. And I guess the thing here is that obviously you can't change the laws of physics, can you? But what I could do is change the operational definition of a ball. And so I paper mache'd a sphere of newspaper around a helium balloon. So then I cut a small hole in the very bottom of the newspaper sphere and placed inside it, inside the sphere, nestled in that hole, I placed a raw egg.
Why? Why an egg?
Well, the thing with the egg is, so first of all, the egg was the perfect weight to counterbalance the lift of the helium balloon. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was heavier. So it would, the thing would start to fall down if you let go of it because of the weight of the egg. Uh-huh. But in theory, and I didn't test this that night at home, the theory here was if I dropped this ball, the weight of the egg would pull it down, and when it hit the ground, the raw egg would crack open, and the contents of the raw egg would spill out onto the ground, and the helium balloon would take this sucker straight up, all the way to the ceiling, higher than the point that it was dropped from.
It's kind of ingenious.
So I the next day, you know, I brought the ball in, told the teacher that I had it, and he said, well, go ahead, demonstrate for the class this ball that you claim can bounce higher than the point from which it was dropped. And I stood in front of the class, and I held it up as high as I could, and I dropped it. And I remember it falling really slowly, almost like time slowed down. It certainly dropped slower than any normal ball. And I wondered if the egg would crack. I didn't know if it would. And I waited and waited, and it got to the ground, and there was this, you know, crunching sound. And it just sort of sat there for a few moments as if it were hesitating. But all of the contents of the egg were leaking out. And then it almost in my mind, it shook free of the deposit it left there. And it slowly, slowly rose up, and it went up past my knees, past my chest, past my face, and I watched it go up, and it went up, 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 past the point where I dropped it from, and all the way up to the ceiling, where it bounced a couple times and came to rest.
Came to rest on the ceiling.
On the ceiling.
You sure showed gravity.
Yeah, I
boss.
Sure did. Yeah. I literally defied gravity, depending on how you define literally.
No, you did. I mean, you were kind of defiant. Let's say you were defiant of gravity.
I like it. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Defiant of gravity.
As kids, the world is new to us. We haven't yet learned how rigid the rules can be. From having to eat your Brussels sprouts, to doing your homework, to being bound by gravity itself, we see rules as somehow flexible, or at least containing loopholes. As we grow older, we lose our spirit of defiance. After decades of paying taxes, renewing driver's licenses, and begrudgingly accepting invitations for tapas, we just start to accept that which we are powerless to change. But every once in a while, something comes along to remind us that rules, even the most fundamental rules, the rules that govern the inner workings of our very own minds, are not as solid as they seem. Philosophers have long been obsessed with paradoxes, riddles that seem to defy the rules of logic, that create a tug of war between evenly matched answers. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? What happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object? Paradoxes bring us face to face with the limits of our rules of thought. And so, as fun as paradoxes may be, grappling with them can take you into chaotic territory and sometimes even drive you mad.
Fuzzy! Pick up the phone!
I decide to call up my parents to put this theory to the test.
I just had a couple questions for you and Mom that I wanted to hit you both up with.
Okay.
How do you count backwards from infinity?
I don't know. That's difficult, eh?
Infinity starts with zero.
No, does it?
Zero is the basis.
I thought infinity is the end.
Yeah.
Well, zero is the beginning and the end.
Who told you that?
Just intuition.
No, Buzz, infinity
is the end. The only infinity I can think of is zero, because it goes backwards and forwards.
You're making me crazy. I can't take
zero. That. My number is zero.
Buzzy, are you all there or what?
Yeah.
Okay, let's try another, maybe just a simpler one. If Dad's a barber, who shaves all and only those men who don't shave themselves, does Dad shave himself?
Does he shave? Oh, my God. There's no answer to that.
I have an answer.
You're driving me crazy.
I had a father who shaved other men. He shaved himself.
No, your dad was a barber.
Yes.
Right, but I mean, that...
But you only shave men that don't shave themselves. So if you shave yourself, that means you're not one of those men.
My father shaved... They didn't want to shave themselves, so they came to him. He shaved
them.
Well,
what has that got to do with anything if your father shaved men? Tell me. Explain to
me. They sat in his barber chair.
Well, what has that got to do with the answer to his question?
What's the question?
All right, let's move on. Let's try another one, okay?
Driving.
Oh, did you get call waiting?
Yeah, I heard something click. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello?
No, I'm still here.
I'm here.
Hello?
Johnny.
No, still, no, you, I guess you don't
have
it. No, I'm here.
Hello? Okay, so it's not me.
All right, what about this one? Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
That's the never-ending argument.
The egg, I think.
Why do you say the egg?
Because the chicken comes out of the egg.
Where did the egg come from?
I don't know.
Comes from the hen.
Right, so where did the hen come from?
The hen comes from her mother. and goes on into infinity.
Right. So which came first? I mean, which was there from the very beginning? Which precedes the other? The chicken or...
You have to go through the whole evolutionary process. You have to go back, maybe even millions of years.
Mm-hmm. So which do you think it is, the chicken or the egg?
Johnny, this is too difficult.
I would say the chicken first, because the chicken is the womb where the egg comes out of.
Okay, but where does the chicken come from?
The chicken comes out of the egg.
Buzz, you're driving me crazy. I can't take this.
The chicken comes out of the egg.
But what you
they
see...
They come out of each other.
It has to be the chicken, because the egg comes out of the chicken, and the chick...
But where did that chicken come from, Buzz?
Another chicken.
God help us.
That's where everything comes out of the womb, and the chicken, the hen, is the womb. How could there be an egg without a chicken?
Well, how could there be a chicken without an egg?
Because a chicken is the womb.
Where did the chicken come from?
From another womb.
But where did that womb come from?
Another womb.
Oh, but you're driving me insane.
There could be no egg without a chicken. I see it from, space. A star comes out of some black space. It's the womb, womb. Everything is created from the womb.
So you're saying you're imagining some kind of... You know, interstellar cosmic chicken coming from outer space.
Yes.
That's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
The only interest I have in chicken is cooking it and eating it.
She's making me chicken tonight, in fact.
I roast it or I barbecue it.
The only thing I would enjoy in the future is more boiled chicken. Even the white meat is not dry.
Buzz, I'm tired. Don't bother me. I can't even...
I love it. And a good chicken soup.
For bothering me, you're ready with the chicken.
All right, I'm happy you're going to give me tonight. It's great.
Good,
you're a great chef.
I'm tired. Be happy you get what you get.
I am. Thank you.
Relationships have their own internal logic. What from the outside might appear to defy all common sense, from within can somehow just work. Take, for instance, my friendship with Gregor, a man who definitely plays by his own rules and encourages me to do the same. Play by his own rules.
Johnny, I'm glad I caught you.
Oh, hey, Gregor.
I had an idea. Are you sitting down?
Always.
Three words. One-man show.
Me doing a one-man show?
Yeah. We get you doing a monologue.
I like that idea. That's playing to my strengths, I think.
Exactly. We get you into a legitimate theater.
Uh-huh.
Doing a Helen Keller show. You talking about Helen Keller.
I don't know a ton about her, but I mean, I could certainly do some research. And
what I'm thinking is a modern take on the Helen Keller story.
Which means?
Well, I already got a name for the show. It kind of sums up my take on it.
Okay.
I'm thinking Helen Keller.
What kind of a title is that?
It's provocative. It gets people's attention.
Gregor, you can't...
We'll change it to something more palatable for mainstream flyover America by the time it goes to Broadway, like Screw Helen Keller.
I don't...
Crumbs to Helen Keller.
All right, I don't want to do this.
Like, you know, we're going to take her down a few pegs. Show the world the real Helen Keller.
The real Helen Keller was a very inspiring figure.
Was she? Was she really?
Yes. Yes, she was. And you can't make fun of deaf-blind people.
Really? Is that a rule? Who made up that rule? Let me tell you something, Johnny. I have a policy in life.
Oh.
You treat the cleaning woman the same as you treat the CEO. You know what that means?
You treat everybody like garbage? Is that what
it means?
No,
you treat everyone the same. Say there's some woman and she was blind and she couldn't talk.
Like Helen Keller.
Like your Helen Kellers, right?
Okay.
You don't get all politically correct and say, oh, her sanctified memory. Oh, we have to be nice to Helen Keller. It's just like homophobia and racism and anti-Semitism all rolled up into one.
Is it?
You're treating her differently because she's differently able.
Well, no,
She just wants to be treated like anyone else famous. She wants to grow up and be like Paris Hilton, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and as a bona fide celebrity, she opens herself up to both adoration, adulation, and as a target.
But I mean, I can't imagine people lining up to see a takedown of Helen Keller.
Just bear with me, Johnny. Imagine this, okay? So you come to this darkened street. You see two theaters. One says, the I Love Helen Keller story. The one next door says, F*** Helen Keller, but good. So you say, that seems intriguing. Maybe an evening in the theater is what I need. You sit down. Lights go down. Organ player comes up. Organ player goes back down. Suddenly, Jonathan Goldstein comes out in his bowler hat. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-ba. Maybe we have those big glossy stairs and you come dancing with one of those canes with the red tips like blind people get.
That is
ba-da-ba-da. You tumble down the stairs. Just when it looks like you're going to break your head on the bottom stairs, you land into some bosomy showgirls. There's like 15 of them. They do a fan dance, some high kicks. You let the house go silent. And you say something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, you know who Helen Keller was? A monster.
That's a little strong, don't you think?
Okay, first Helen Keller quote appears on the screen.
Yeah.
It is a terrible thing to see and have no vision. And you just take her to task for that.
Why would I take her to task? How can you take her to task for that?
What the hell do you mean it's a terrible thing to see and have no vision? You can't see. I mean, what are you talking about?
Gregor, this is just horrible. What's the bigger message? What's the bigger
point? Is that when you make a hero of someone, you diminish yourself in some way. We embiggen others to ensmallen ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that new Lincoln movie that came out with Steven Spielberg. Turns out, he used to beat up his wife, he was a drunk, he had a raging temper.
None of that is true.
What do you mean it's not true? The whole point of that Spielberg movie is that he turned out to be the wife-beating drunk that we all hoped he'd be, because we felt bad that we were falling short of this Abraham Lincoln guy who was up on a pedestal.
So you think by taking down one of the most well-regarded figures of history, that's going
to... You need to build someone up and tear them down. It makes everyone feel better.
What did Helen Keller ever do to anyone?
She rode the sanctimony train for about 100 years.
Okay, Gregor, we're not doing this.
You don't like the Helen Keller thing? Fine. Forget I said it. I got other ideas. I already optioned the rights for you as Rosa Parks.
That is so offensive.
How about a monologue about that monster Lennon? John Lennon, I'm talking about.
Okay,
good. How about Albert Einstein? People think he's all great and smart. You know what the truth is about Einstein? Big dummy who wore a wig.
On Wiretap today, you heard Gregor Ehrlich, Buzz and Dina Goldstein, Scott Lederer, and Ezra Birkbeck reading a short story I wrote. At the beginning of today's show, you heard a montage of Rules to Live By written by our Facebook fans. Thanks to our colleagues at CBC Montreal for reading them. And special thanks to Roy Sorensen, author of A Brief History of the Paradox. Wiretap is produced by Mira Bertwin-Tonick, Crystal Duhame, and me, Jonathan Goldstein. Tune into Wiretap Saturdays at 3:30 and Thursday evenings at 11:30. You can also hear Wiretap across North America on Sirius XM. Or subscribe to the free podcast at cbc.ca/wiretap, where you can also download the latest Wiretap ringtone.
It's the womb, the womb. Everything is created from the womb.
Let my father explain the birds and the bees with every ring of your phone.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.